These are the recollections of Turner Ashby. Memories of the years when the oceans rose. The several states were separated asunder. Four. Arrived at the property on the east slope of the Shenandoahs. Around midnight, maybe 1 a.m. morning. I'd followed Lady Fitzgerald's directions that I'd found on the digitip in her ring. They were written in Dream Satchel, which was a children's game, a kids' program, a sophisticated one. Dream Satchel claimed to capture the subconscious in images off the chips in our heads. Make a little story out of them, based on psychoelectronics. Reading them was like reading sidewalk drawings of a five-year-old. They were simple, little cartoon drawings, but they had the truth in them somewhere, they did. Some people said it was all foolishness, kind of like Plato. Some said there was something to it, that these cartoon maps made sense if you cock your head and looked at it just so. I remember doing a dream satchel as a kid once or twice, and the images were oddly reflective of my own dreams. Made no one ever mind of me. I didn't like my dreams. Ladies, however, and she loved her dreams. Loved to capture pictures from her dreams or her subconscious, whatever it was. Don't ask me how these things worked. But these dreams, they had pictures and they're pretty. She'd print them out, paste them on her wall like French cave paintings, study them. She said they said something about her she couldn't say for herself. And that is what she sent me concealed in her ring, was directions or instructions, illustrated and printed out in Dream Satchel. Now, Lays had sent an earlier Twitter to me, said that she was going to get rid of the chip in her head, pull it out. That was so. I had a copy of her last dream, Lays' last dream. I had not expected my father's truck to make it all the way up into the mountains. I expect to run out of gas. That's what cars usually did back then in the times of want. I'd taken the back roads. I'd been careful. Avoided the authorities. I brought supplies, a sleeping bag, a couple books, half a cake, my mother's cake. Couldn't do without that. I was prepared. And I was so sure, I was so sure, I was so sure Larry's would be there. I just knew it. And I was so sure she'd be waiting there in those mountains for me. She'd be waiting and we'd finish our kiss. But it was not to be. She was not there. Not up at the main house, not at the cabin, or the converted stables. I checked them all, of course. They were locked and dark. Liz was not to be found. I saw no lights down at Sam Bellow's place. He was a caretaker. I'd check on him in the morning, no reason to wake him. He'd be up at 4 in the morning anyway. That was Sam. I did not bother. I was too tired to bother. I slept in the truck that night. Slept like a baby, like the dead, like a fool. I did not dream, but I remembered. Remembered so clearly one of the first times I was up on that property. One of the first big events on the property. Lays' second oldest sister, Evelyn, was to be married on the late spring afternoon, oh, maybe 10 years earlier. About 20 or 22, I suppose. Liz and I were all but 7 or 8. It was quite a ceremony, quite an affair, that wedding. All kinds of people came, dignitaries and other such like, to fill up the folding chairs in the lawn. What I remember most was not the cake, nor the dress. And I do not, after all these years, remember the groom's name. Although I do remember he was jailed not so many years later for securities fraud. Typical, not surprising. It was a messy divorce. Now, what I remember best about the wedding day was that Eric Clapton, famous blues guitarist, had performed both the wedding march and the Sunshine of Your Love for the occasion. Everyone expected him to play these selections acoustically, as advertised on his website. Instead, he brought along a whole electric band, brought a guest, brought Chicago bluesman Buddy Guy, who played as if 1962 had never ended. Remarkable. They played all the blues all afternoon. Never knew whether the bride and groom appreciated it. I did. Buddy Guy passed away not too many years later. Clapton himself lived on to be 107, died in the year 2050. Kept playing gigs the whole time. Now, ladies, we'd had a small part in the wedding as an assistant to the assistant flower girl, a 12-year-old bossy cousin, had ducked out of the ceremony as soon as she had heard the words, "I do." She did not stick around for the rise or the tossing of the bouquet. She ducked the photographers, having withstood a number of group shots, and was hell-bent to get out of there. Enough was enough. Ladies found me. I had lost my shoes by that time, and I was headed for Corbin Creek. "Save me, Turner, save me. You are my only hope," she said. Which reminds me, not so long ago, the story of Star Wars, Litany, was annexed into the newly revised 22nd century New North American Bible as part of the Book of Lucas. Only half jest. "We're not going to make it to the creek. Cousins are looking for you," I said to ladies. I pointed to a gaggle, pink and lavender clad girls coming our way. "Under here," I said, and I grabbed Lays' hand, and we ducked under the porch, which had a white lattice gate and white lattice walls. I'd found it earlier. There was the usual dirt and dust, a couple of bent fold-up chairs under there, a tarpaulin, smell of a broken lawnmower and cut grass. All in all, not a bad hidey hole for children. We waited for the posse to go by, and then we realized we were right under the band. Ground the porch shook with the blues. Then the band took a break, and we heard a whisper. "You want some cake down there?" It was Buddy Guy talking to us. He said, "If you want some cake, you're going to have to come up here. I can't fit down there." "We're hiding," Lays said. "We are on the run." "Still, you got to eat," Buddy said. Pink and Lavender posse looked like it was headed for the duck pond, so Lays and I, we took a chance. Climbed up and had cake with Al Clapton and Buddy Guy. Buddy let Lays strum his guitar. The notes went echoing down in the valley. That's what you get when you're a pretty girl with a lavender sash. When I awoke the next morning, the sun was out. And there were people passing by and all around the truck, just marching by. I hadn't realized I'd parked the truck in the middle of the road. I'd been tired. I know I'd come through the gates, and I know I'd locked them behind me. I always did. I'd rolled up the mile and a half drive, and left the truck right in the middle of the road. Never occurred to me anybody would be coming past. None of these marching people were paying much attention to me or the truck. They were like water going around a rock. They were on foot, with backpacks, and carts, and strollers for the children. Singing, humming, unshaven, all dressed in similar white outfits. They did not necessarily look religious, although I imagine they were. They had the look of a group all banded together for a purpose. I opened up the door and got out of the truck. A couple kids my age had to slow up and walk around me and that truck door. And I just blurted out without thinking. I said, "Who are you? This is private property." Like I was lord of the manor. They stopped and the boy said, "I'm Taylor Smith." And the girl said right after and says, "I'm Taylor Smith." And I said, "Well, that can't be. You both can't be Taylor Smith." And they said, "Yes, they were." And I said, "Where are you headed?" And they said, "That way." And pointed up the hill. I said, "Who are all these people?" And the girl spoke up and she had lovely eyes. She said, "They are Taylor Smith. We all are. We're all Taylor Smith." And I said, "Even the babies and the old people, they're all Taylor Smith." Then I realized these were name changers. I'd heard of them, never seen them before, but I'd heard. Sometimes they called themselves chip changers because they were Jimmy with the memory and the memory chips. But either way, what they were was a group of people bent on erasing their identities. Name changing began, like so many other things in our culture, with the Personal Income Tax Assignment Liabilities Act back in the late teens, early 2020s, when a fairly large portion of the huge trillions of dollars of federal debt was privatized. In other words, the national tax burden was put up for sale. Banks and investors and speculators bid on the tax rolls, bought up the debt, the money owed, and the money projected to be owed. They bid on it outright, and then they sold those bids and traded them just like on Wall Street. And then, of course, they asked very politely that the citizens of the United States pay their fair share of the United States tax assigned to them. The monies did not go back to the government. The funds went on to the lien holders. Texas and China were two of the chief investors. Well, as one can imagine, suddenly nobody wanted to admit to being a United States citizen no more, or admit that they were what they had actually become, debtors. Didn't seem like that would pay, so groups of people decided to change, lose their names, erase their social security numbers, leave their towns and leave their identities behind. Suddenly occurred to me, what if ladies had fallen in with the name changes? I started looking over the tops of their heads for her. Maybe she'd met up with a group of Taylor Smiths at the Ohio border, crossed West Virginia, crossed the river at Harper's Ferry, and was heading home. Maybe she changed her name to Smith or Jones, or depending on what neck of the woods you were in, Chatterjee or Valdez. They were all nice names to change to. I understood there was an entire town of Joneses just outside Atlanta. 100,000. All taking the same name, try to escape those Texas tax men. Don't you know about the stay put? I asked Taylor Smith. I said, don't you know about the Commonwealth of Virginia? Saying nobody's supposed to go nowhere. It's a stay put. The authorities say so. I said that with the authority of someone who really never thought about what he's talking about. That ain't for us, Taylor Smith said. Ladies, I called her name and I called it over the crowd. Ain't nobody here except Taylor Smith, the boy said. I said, shut up, I'm looking for Lays. Then I felt my feet go out from under me, and my shoulders hit the ground just before my head did. Rang my bell and cut a gash in my head. I tried to struggle, but my arms were pinned behind my back. Where's a girl? Rayford Covington hissed in my ear. What girl? I asked. Don't you screw with me, Rayford said. He had a white hoodie on and had a knife. He said, I'd as soon cut you as look at you. Where's the Fitzgerald girl? Taylor, what you doing? The pretty Taylor Smith asked. Shut up and get out of here. Rayford pressed his knee into my back. Where is she? She worth a lot of money. Double barrel shotgun cocked behind us. Well, we'll have to find out what happened about that. More recollections to come. Turner Ashby.